All right, guys, welcome back to another NRL Hunter podcast. I am here with the man, Mr. Ken Trapp from Salmon River Solutions. Ken, how are you today?
I'm good. You got me up early.
I did. So just so you guys know, it's like 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I told Ken, I said, Ken, we can do this at any time you want, whatever schedule works. I said, I'm up pretty early. And so he picked the time and I said, yeah, let's do it. Let's get it done early first thing in the morning. So I'm glad you joined us today.
Yeah. Easier for me to come in to the shop before everyone gets here. It's kind of loud and whatnot. So
yeah. So let's tell everybody a little bit about who you are and what you do so that there's some context to the conversation.
Yeah. All right. So I'm Ken Trapp. I'm a co-owner of Salmon River Solutions. Kind of got introduced to NRL Hunter 2 years ago. Went to one match. Didn't shoot it. Thought it was really cool, though. Took me a while to save up some money and actually build a gun. Started shooting this 2023 season. Fell in love with it. At SRS, we make a lot of ultralight hunting products. I've been hunting since I was, following my dad and around in the mountains at like 4 years old, so it's always been a passion of mine. So getting more into big game hunting and trying to lighten the load on your back and your gun and everything like that kind of led us to making some innovative ultralight products.
Nice. So Salmon River Solutions, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I know you mainly for your muzzle brakes and your Arca rails.
Yeah.
Right. So as you were developing or designing products for Salmon River Solutions, why muzzle brakes and why Arca rails?
The Arca rails one is kind of cool. I had a tripod and I never did any research on if you could actually buy Arca rails at the time. I think there were two companies making them. And I think it was 2019, maybe. I was leaving for a hunt. I'm a machinist by trade anyways. So I worked swing shift and I was up to like 2:30 in the morning, got off work and actually just made myself a little tiny Arca rail and then made a cutout in my stock and bolted that in there and bedded it to the stock. That was my first Arca rail that I ever made. I used it on that hunt. And after that, I was like, I can do better than this. This was like as fast as I could do it, yeah, but from there, ended up doing the Arca pick, which is an Arca section and a Picatinny section with a sling stud. And then the Arca mini, it was the first two that I actually made that actually came out nice, looked good. And those are the same models that we make today.
So the Arca rail actually came before the break.
Yes. Yeah.
Nice. And go ahead.
Yeah. So, kind of funny story with brakes. I designed a few really simple, three-port brakes. One of them was a slab titanium brake. And, one of them just a like 0.85 inch round diameter brake. And, I'd spoken to Ryan Avery on Rockslide a few times.
Right.
And, he's impossible to get a hold of.
I think I left him a message a month ago and I haven't heard from him yet.
Yeah, that's about normal. So I saw on Rockslide he was selling a First Light puffy coat. So right. I was like, I'll take it. Can I pick it up from you? Because he lives local to me.
Right.
So I went over there and then actually introduced myself and got him some breaks for making and kind of partnered up with him from there. And the rest is history.
Hold on. So Ryan Avery is part of SRS?
No, he's part of Pro Muzzle Brakes.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yes,
okay.
we kind of have our own thing with Pro Muzzle Brakes. So it's Jake Machaney of Unknown Munitions, Ryan Avery of Rockslide, and then SRS.
I didn't know that there was the collaboration between you three. That's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah. No, it works out good. It lets us kind of focus less on the sales aspect of stuff and just focus on keeping up with the production and everything. So.
Heck yeah, that's smart. That's really cool because they I mean, obviously have their own extended reach. So that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's very cool. Actually, Ryan and his wife came out and shot a hunter match last season. And when I was able to talk to him, he said he was planning to shoot three or four matches in the upcoming season. So we might be seeing more of him.
Yeah, that's five matches now, apparently.
Yeah.
He was trying to figure out which ones I was going to, so yeah, he'll be at a bunch of them this year.
Nice. That's fantastic. Fantastic. So SRS literally started because of your need to build an ARCA rail for your hunting rifle, and that's kind of how the whole company started, or?
Yeah, pretty much. I just made a few prototypes originally, and then I ended up doing like a small production run, working with a buddy of mine that was able to make them, and then from there we just ended up like, hey, I think we can do this. My dad was actually a machinist and was retiring and selling his business at the time, so ended up getting a 2002 mold making mill from him. Spent all the money me and Zach had to it actually cost more money to get the machine moved 20 miles than it cost to get the machine, buy the machine.
That's crazy. So it's really a home business grown into a full-time job.
I guess in 2021 October, I went full time with it. And at that time I was like, I don't know if there's enough work, but I'm just gonna go for it. In that 3 months, so by the end of 2021, Zach started full time. So it went from October 2021 being questionable if like I could just support me, and then the 3 months later being like, Zach, we have enough work for you to work full time now too.
That's freaking cool. I mean, you hear about a lot of, startup companies, from the home and things of that nature. But a lot of them don't know how to reach that next level of success, which you guys have obviously done.
Yeah, it's definitely been a learning curve. One of my buddies is a mechanical engineer. I shoot with him. He says like machinists are always awkward. He's not wrong on there. We're not like exactly people. I don't know. I can't think of the word.
People,
We're
people.
not like, yeah, people. Yeah, there you go. We're not exactly like sociable, like not outgoing, but I've gotten a lot better on it at like talking to people, and it helps like having shared interests, obviously, like talking about guns and stuff.
Right.
So, but yeah, it's like crazy to think that yeah, just a little over 3 years ago we started the business. I mean, up until April this year, we were in Zach's shop with just three little CNC machines, and then we moved into the building we share with the Shoot to Hunt podcast and Unknown Munitions,
Okay.
and now we
I
got
started listening to that Shoot to Hunt podcast. That's a good podcast as well. You guys should check it out.
yeah I it is a good one. I was on there for one of them.
Nice.
Hopefully I'm less awkward on this one.
You're doing great, bro.
But yeah, now we got three full-time employees, and yeah, cranking stuff out.
That's fantastic. So with the muzzle brake, let's pretend our audience is brand new to hunting, okay? Because a lot of them are. I've been getting requests for podcasts for the new guy, not the seasoned guy. So a lot of traditional rifles come with either a cap or no muzzle brake at all when you buy them straight from the factory or Cabela's, whatever it is, right? What is the benefit of a muzzle brake on a hunting rifle? And then from there, can you even explain even further why you'd want a 3 or a 5 port, or why you would want a different size muzzle brake?
I mean, I can pretty much explain my experience with muzzle brakes and how I became a better shooter. So like probably 7 years ago, I was happy to hit three shots on an 8-inch paper plate at 100 yards, like super recoil sensitive. You know it's gonna
Right.
break, it's gonna break, flinch, flinch, flinch.
Right.
So I talked to a few people, and back then I didn't really even know people that were good at shooting. No one in my life was good at shooting. I got hooked up with a gunsmith up here named Matt Whaley, and he threaded my barrel and put a brake on for me, just a brake he made on a manual mill, manual lathe, with three ports on it. And then I got a choat stock. They're like 6.5, 7 pounds. So I had like a 14-pound hunting gun all of a sudden, just so I could practice with it and get better at not flinching. And then adding a new trigger to that gun, and all of a sudden, like, hey, I can actually shoot decent groups. So getting rid of that recoil helped me train myself to not flinch. Now I can I can shoot any gun, you know, like 6 pound trigger pull on a really light gun that recoils hard, I can still shoot that well. But having that muzzle brake on that gun helped me train myself out of flinching. And that was a huge one for me. Another aspect is, for younger shooters, they're going to be recoil sensitive pretty much no matter what when they start out shooting. So having a muzzle brake on there, so it's really a lot lighter recoil, helps them, you know, overcome that flinch factor.
Gotcha. And that's important because if you can mitigate recoil better, you can actually watch where you're impacting, whether it's a hit or a miss. So then if you have to take a second or a third follow-up shot, you are still on target most of the time if you can manage that recoil better.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some of that is, you know, squaring up to your gun in whatever position you are. But a lot of that is, you know, the recoil of the gun. As long as you square up to the gun well and have a good muzzle brake, you should be able to keep your target in your shot window. And that, yeah, obviously that's huge for NRL Hunter, having follow-up shots. That's something I'm still working on, is watching my impacts and trying to make a correction on follow-up shots. But yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. It's definitely a learning curve to do that, especially with the lighter rifles, which is why you see in like the PRS series or whatnot, people are starting to use a lot heavier rifles because it helps mitigate that recoil because of the weight. Whereas in NRL Hunter, we have, you know, a 12 and a 16-pound rifle class for the most part, right?
Yeah.
So weight's a big difference, and mitigating that recoil is very important to make sure you can get those follow-up shots.
Yeah, definitely. Like my PRS gun, I think, is 24 and a half pounds. And then I go to my NRL Hunter gun, which is, you know, 15.9. And then I swap the buttstock on that gun and take the weights off, and I go hunting with that at like 9.5 pounds.
Wow. So it's the same gun, you just switch the plates out?
The buttstock and weights.
Wow, okay. Nice. That's fantastic. So 9, almost 16, and 24. So that's a huge differences.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So you said you had started hunting, you know, as early as 4 years old with your dad. Tell us some of your hunting experience. Like, what do you like to hunt? Where do you not where do you hunt, but like, where have you hunted? What tell us some stories, because I was doing a little bit of Facebook stalking, and I saw a picture of you like hugging a bear, and walk, it looked like you were like grabbing this big bear and walking off or something.
Yeah, that was spring this year. That was actually a really cool kind of really light brown color phase bear with a white patch on his chest. That was down in Hell's Canyon. It was ridiculously steep. We couldn't even tell how steep it was until we got over there. And then
Oh, yeah.
yeah, like I moved its paw to just kind of look at its chest, and it started rolling down the hill. So I was like, we got to move it. And so I pretty much bear hugged it, picked it up with my arms, and just took it over to where there was a tree that fell over, and we were able to get it quartered and skinned in the like a pocket where the tree had fallen over. Yeah, and I had a really good deer tag this year that I didn't end up doing justice, but got a decent 24-inch wide 4-point mule deer.
Nice. No,
Yeah.
that's solid. Dude, I just got back from Hell's Canyon. I had an elk tag in Hell's Canyon.
Nice.
And yeah, that was you can listen to the podcast that I did with Marshall from Preferred Barrels about how that hunt went. It was tag soup all day long.
Yeah, I've done that elk hunt before. It's yeah. I don't know which state you're in, because there's technically three right there, but for the Idaho tag on one of them, it's just like there's elk in there somewhere, but the spot I was in was just all interspersed private land where it's hard to get, limited public. But Yeah, it's Hell's Canyon's awesome. I like to bear hunt down there. We're actually trying to do a either a float hunt. So I whitewater raft also.
Oh, cool.
So might do a float hunt, hunting up from the river off the raft, or might have a buddy with a jet boat come up and either drop us off or just hang out with us and run us up the river so we can glass from the beaches for bear.
Nice. So it sounds like you like to bear hunt quite a bit.
It's just an easy season because there's not as much going on. Fall
Gotcha.
is always just su super busy. The shop's really busy in fall. I mean, I still took like I think there was a stretch, 1 month stretch where I was like not in the shop for 24 days this
Wow.
fall, but makes
Okay.
it kind of hard. I just try to have cell service where I end up hunting.
Right. Very cool. So what is your preferred animal to hunt then?
This was my first year shooting a mule deer, and that was a lot of fun. We had an absolute tank that we were going after. Everybody gave us a slip into a different unit,
Oh,
which
totally.
kind of sucks hunting borders like that. But he went over an over the counter unit, so I might try to hunt that over the counter unit in that spot next year. But probably elk. I've only shot a few elk, but it's I'm good at finding elk when I don't have tags.
Right.
if I'm with somebody that's hunting elk, like we'll find elk like right away. Like I'm a lucky charm for other people hunting, just not myself.
That's funny. It's always that way. You can when you have the tag, they know to stay away from you. But when you don't, they're just like, yeah, whatever. You can't touch us.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty cool. So do you hunt mainly in Idaho or Washington? Because I know you're up in the Pacific Northwest. So where do you what state do you like to hunt?
I mean, this is the first year I've ever hunted out of state.
Okay.
I've lived in Idaho my whole life. I've just hunted in Idaho, but I did go hunt in Oregon this year. That was a good hunt. My buddy ended up with a nice 3x4 heavy mule deer. I missed a shot because and it yeah I had a really good setup and I wouldn't be able to get set up how I was without the experience I have from mineral hunter. And I've been training my buddy that I was with who hasn't shot mineral hunter on like shot positions and stuff, and he's like been enlightened on how versatile like tripod rear support and stuff like that is. But yeah, I missed my shot on a deer at 1080 because I had everything set, elevation was perfect, and had my wind hold in my head and didn't hold it. I don't know why I didn't. I held zero wind. I even calculated it and I just didn't hold it. And I was like,
Oh,
really? Come on.
brain fart.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's like, but 1080s, I mean, that's a poke, man. That's a quite a distance.
Yeah, I mean, we shoot quite a bit. I was confident that at that distance, it was pretty much a level shot. It wasn't steep at all. I was like eye prone.
Right.
But I was solid. Took some practice shots the day prior and was confident in the gun doing what it should. And yeah, it was a perfect shot if I would have held that 24 inches of wind, but I didn't. I don't know why.
See, and that's the thing. There's a lot of people that think like long range hunting is not ethical or it's not a good thing. To me, and I'm curious what your opinion is. I mean, I haven't taken a shot at an animal at that distance, just because I'm not comfortable shooting at an animal that distance. I know that, you know, on steel, you know, I've shot, you know, way further than 1,000 yards. That's fine, not a big deal. I think that if you have the skill set, my opinion is if you have the skill set, if you have the confidence and you're in the right conditions to take that
Yeah.
shot and you know that you can take that shot, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean that's not a shot I normally would have taken, but it was only like a 3 mile an hour wind. It was a perfect 90 degree to us. I was prone, really steady. The deer was just standing there and he'd been standing there in his bed for 20 minutes. I watched him stand up and he'd just been standing there for 20 minutes, not moving at all. So it was a shot I was confident in taking, and we'd been practicing shooting the day prior. What I should have done is take a spotter shot on some rocks that were probably 300 yards away.
Right.
I don't at that distance, I don't think he would have moved. I think he only, ran off because I did hit just right in front of him.
Yeah, so you spooked him.
Yeah, but I mean, this year after I got back from that hunt, I went out with one of my other buddies I shoot with, and he shot an elk off the tripod at like 550 at very last light. But I mean, just kneeling there was no other way you could have making that shot because there was 3 feet of cover in front of us. You had to get elevated above that,
Right.
and then 3 days later, my other buddy I was with shot a bull at 10:30.
Wow, okay. Nice. So
It's
they're actually finding themselves in real world scenarios that we practice in an NRL Hunter.
yeah, definitely. Like my mule deer this year, I shot at 720, and that one was a little bit tougher shot for me because there were two other smaller bucks, but not that much smaller, and that they were sparring and they kept switching in behind this one big tree. So I kept losing track of him, and it was like 20, 25 minutes of me just laying on the gun ready to take a shot,
Oh.
but them just moving constantly and not me not being able to like, okay, is it the right buck? Is it the right buck?
Right.
And then when they're sparring, they're constantly moving.
Constantly
So,
moving, yeah.
I got to the point where I was like, I just like backed off the gun, sat up and just like caught my breath, like calmed down, waited for him to move out, and then got back on the gun and shot him.
Nice. That must have been a pretty intense, I guess, watching the two bucks go at it for 20 minutes and back in and out of sight. Man, I would have been my adrenaline would have been high for sure.
Yeah, that's how I was. So I was like, I just gotta like, okay, calm down, deep breath. Like, and I mean, it's not like it was a huge deer, but it was my first mule deer, so it was yeah, definitely exciting to shoot one. And it was cool watching them, spar with two other bucks.
Yeah, I've never seen that in real life before. So that's freaking cool that you got to witness that.
Yeah.
Nice. So this season is pretty much wrapped, or are you hunting the end of this season? Right now we're still in 2023. I think this is gonna preference with this podcast will probably come out in January sometime. But for the 2023 hunting season, are you pretty much done, or you still have another tag or?
I got a 4 day long shot coming up. We're going down to southern Idaho with the tag I have. There's a late season archery bull. So,
Nice.
yeah, we'll see elk, but getting close to him is probably not going to happen. It's archery, and we're talking open sagebrush territory with no cover. So, trying to get to archery range in December on a
Yeah,
bull elk will be a little challenging.
that'll be tough, but that should be a fun adventure.
Yeah, it's even if we don't get too close to anything, we'll definitely see elk because they're all, kind of they migrated out of the high elevation stuff. So we'll definitely see them, but getting them or finding them in a spot that we can actually put a stock on them will be tough.
Right. So Idaho has, so if you don't live in the state of Idaho, you have to go into an out of state, it's not really a draw, but an out of state lottery, I guess, kind of, where you go onto the Idaho Fish and Game website, and then you basically wait there until your number's called, and then you could buy whatever tags they have allocated. Last year, I literally waited 10 hours to be able to get the deer and the elk tag that I have tag soup on. That opens up December 1st, 2023, and I plan on waiting online again to see if I can get another tag in Idaho. Now, question for you, since you know the state better than I do, obviously, Hell's Canyon kicked my ass. I'm just not physically fit for that elevation back and forth. Where would you recommend somewhere in Idaho, like southern, eastern, western? What would you recommend that would be a good hunt, but maybe not as steep as of an elevation like Hell's Canyon?
North Idaho actually has some pretty fun areas to just like spot and stalk whitetail. The biggest whitetail I've seen in the state have been down in the Selway unit, which is kind of weird because it's wilderness, higher elevation, like 6,000, 7,000 feet. There's actually some really nice whitetail in there too. Limited amounts of mule deer. If you go down south, it's a lot more open. Like the very southern end of the state is more kind of like rolling sagebrush hills and whatnot, maybe 5,000 feet, 4,000 feet. The as a non-resident, you have to pick a specific unit to hunt for deer. Elk, you get zones, which is like a conglomerate of units. But yeah, for deer, I can just get a regular deer tag as a resident, and then you can hunt whatever open deer season there is. So, I could hunt, the very north, just south of Canada, Unit One. I could hunt that for whitetail, the late season, but early season I could have been, on the very southern edge of the state, hunting mule deer with a bow or something like that,
So there's definitely a bunch of different terrain in Idaho and a bunch of different species that you can hunt. Mule deer. So I got to redeem myself. So hopefully I'll be able to do mule deer, elk, and then I want to do a bear in Idaho as well.
The bear season, you can just buy a bear tag and hunt whatever unit as a non-resident you want to. It's a lot more flexible, and there's a lot of good bear hunting in Idaho. You could either do baited hunts, which I've never done one of those, but I like spot and stalk bear. It's really fun. Like this bear this spring, I didn't spot it, I heard it at like half a mile away. It was flipping rocks, and it was so ridiculously steep. Those rocks were rolling all the way down into a rock pile. So I heard a rock hitting in the bottom, and just like slowly moved up the draw with my binos until I actually saw the bear.
That's cool. That's way cool. Yeah, I've seen the baiting. I've never done baiting before of a bear or anything of that nature. I think I think you have to be in the right mindset to shoot to do a baited hunt.
Yeah.
Spot and stalk is primarily what I've done, and that seems like it'd be a hell of an adventure. But I gotta find somewhere in Idaho that's not Hell's Canyon to find a bear.
Yeah, it's definitely steep in Hell's Canyon, but there's a good bear population. But there's bears all over. It's just the challenging thing about bear I've seen, and I've mostly hunted North Idaho for bear, is that they're not like elk. Like most of the places I hunt for elk, there's like you can pretty much guarantee there's elk in every large draw. Bears, that seems like in North Idaho, at least they're in pockets where you'll have like you can have a big area that doesn't have any bears or really limited population of bears, and then you could like move like 3 miles and there'd be like a lot of bears in that one area.
Interesting. So do bears tend to migrate quite a bit, or they stay in those pockets and they don't really leave those pockets for their, X amount of time?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm far from an expert on
All
bears.
right, gotcha. All right, fair enough. Fair enough. That's way cool, man. That's way cool. So you have quite a bit going on. So let's get back to SRS. So you have the brakes, you have the ARCA rails and the ARCA slash PICK rails. Are we allowed to talk about any new products that are coming up, or is that kind of hush hush until release?
We're gonna start chasing the factory rifle aftermarket stuff a little bit harder for 2024. I'd say probably what 0.5% of people actually buying rifles are buying like custom rifles, as opposed to like the guy back east that's gonna go out and buy a Savage ultralight rifle. There's way more people buying factory rifles, so we're trying to make some more products that are specialized for certain factory rifles. I think Savage is really underserved as far as like higher end ultralight products go. So we're going to be coming out with some really good products for Savages. And then just the standard Model 700 stuff, also like the Springfield Waypoints. We're going to do some special rails and stuff specific to the Springfield Waypoints also. Besides that, we're doing a kind of a collaboration with Unknown Munitions on a chassis. I got a meeting with my one of my best friends, hunting buddies, is a mechanical engineer, and he does the more complicated designs for us, and then a lot of the assembly design for Unknown Munitions also. So we'll be doing a chassis meeting, stop by and have dinner at their house and talk about shooting and various chassis design aspects, stuff like that tonight. But yeah, it's 2024 should be a good year. A lot of new products being launched.
We talked about your rifle going from, hunting to a NRL hunter to a PRS rig. So I should have asked then, but we're going to ask now, what is your rifle setup? Because people are going to want to know what rifle they can use for all three and how you have yours built.
It's not one gun. I have a six dasher for PRS.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I misunderstood.
Yeah, no worries. I have a six dasher for PRS, but my NRL hunter gun slash my hunting gun is just a 6.5 PRC. I load it really light. I'm probably like 7 grains under where I would normally shoot it if I was just hunting with it.
Okay.
Just to, barely make power factor essentially. I'm shooting the 140 grain ELDMs and they shoot phenomenal out of that gun. But yeah, so I have a what it's a bat igniter action, and then a aluminum element 4.0.
Okay.
But I swapped from the carbon buttstock to the C6 buttstock when I'm shooting NRL Hunter, so it's like 3 pounds heavier, and then I just stack the whole fore end with our the SRS M-Lok fore end weights
With the
to
weights.
get to get the weight exactly where I want it.
Nice. And what optic are you running?
The Mark V.
Leupold Mark V.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then we have to ask, I mean, you have your choice of any brake you want, so which brake are you running on yours?
Right now it's the Typro 5 in the 990 diameter. We're gonna be coming out with the 5-port self-timer in 5/8, 24 and 3/4 in 1.2 inch. We haven't had a self-timer in Thai in that size yet, but with some testing we've done, there's a definite difference between the 1.2 inch diameter and the 0.990. So we're gonna be coming out with that self timer. I'll be running it, and then a bunch of other people that we kind of sponsor, and then my shooting buddies will be running that too.
Nice. So when you say tie for the average Joe that's listening, tie, you're referring to a titanium.
Yeah, Thai titanium. Yeah, that's
Titanium
like we
Pro, right?
yeah, because we have Thai Pro brakes and we have SS Pro brakes. There's stainless steel
Right.
and Thai for titanium.
So the titanium versus stainless steel, besides weight factor, is there any other performance difference?
No, they're exactly the same.
Okay.
It's just the tie is half the weight.
Yeah, which is obviously important when you're backpacking in or you're trying to do Hell's Canyon.
Yeah, or trying to make weight for NRL Hunter.
Or trying to make weight for NRL Hunter. Absolutely. Is that the same setup you're going to be running for the 24 season? Awesome.
Yeah, that's the plan right now, unless I miraculously build another gun, which happens often.
Very cool. So people are going to ask, the most common round in NRL Hunter is 6.5 Creedmoor. Why did you decide to go with the PRC?
If I wanted to, I could load it a little bit hotter for hunting.
Okay.
Yeah,
So
it's like right now it's like just a little bit over where you could get performance wise with a 22-inch barrel on a 6.5 Creedmoor. I just had this the 22-inch barrel and it would have been running really hot to get the 140 ELDMs to make power factor with
right.
6.5 Creed. And then just having that little bit more oomph behind it if I want to go hunting.
No, absolutely. That makes sense. With the NRL Hunter, your experience in shooting those matches and attending that and into the hunting world, what would you say has been your biggest takeaway from what you've learned from a hunter match to a real world scenario?
Tripod rear support, like the amount of stability you can get, especially if like you're hunting with someone else and you both have tripods, you can clip into your the tripod in the front and use tripod rear support. The amount of shot stability you can create in like standing, kneeling, seated conditions is ridiculous. Like the your shot opportunities are tenfold.
Right. So do you always go rear support or rear tripod support when you have the opportunity to, or is that like what would be the ideal scenario to do that?
It's steep in Idaho.
True.
It's you got to take a lot of steep shots where I think tripod rear does help a lot. Or tripod front when you're shooting, across canyon and you're, on the downhill side. Yeah, it's such a flexible shot position. I mean, I also hauled a triple pole around with me, probably 100 miles hunting this year.
You carry the triple pole with you?
Yeah, I wish I had the light head, but it's
Wow.
just the full heavy triple pull. But I mean, most of the season I was with my buddy who doesn't have a heavy duty bike or heavy duty tripod. So I
Right.
wanted the triple pull ability to, extend all the way and be able to use tripod rear, triple pull front.
Nice. So triple pole, if you guys aren't familiar with that, it's a tripod that I don't know what the exact height is. Do you know what the full extension height is?
It's a bipod, you said
Or
tripod.
sorry, bipod. I apologize.
I want to say it's like 36 inches
So 3 feet.
on the high, yeah, 3 feet on the highest setting.
Yeah, so this is a huge bipod that has three extensions, and it, like Ken was saying, it extends out 3 feet. So it's literally, I look at it as more of like a predator hunting type of a thing, but obviously you could use it for a lot of different things. It is a little bit heavy because of its size and the dimensions and whatnot. But actually in Idaho, being able to utilize that in tripod rear support actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you didn't have a tripod, you could use triple pull front and like your shooting bag or something. You can get in weird positions where you use your knee as your elbow rest too. But yeah, I just try to gravitate towards a tripod rear because why not? I always have a tripod with me, and I took some shots this deer season. Shot like a two shots, 2 inch off impact point. With my gun with like my super lightweight tripod, using that as rear support, and it was still super steady, like a two shots 2 inches apart at 625.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah,
So
it's just
what tripod are you running?
right now I use mostly a Akara and a Leofoto. I think it's like the C342.
Okay.
Otherwise, I just have a carbon, really lightweight ProMaster. If I'm gonna be some of the hunting we do, we ride dirt bikes on, and some of the trails are really rough. Like I beat the shit out of myself last year on a dirt bike, wrecking probably like 10 times, like denting the
Wow.
bell on a scope, and I probably would have taken the Outdoorsman's one on that one, just because I know I can beat the hell out of that tripod.
Right.
And it'll work. Like I tipped my Leofoto over bear hunting this year and it cracked the carbon in one spot.
Really?
Yeah,
Wow.
I'm really rough on stuff.
Well, no, but that, I mean, that's how you find out what works, right?
Yeah, exactly. I duct taped it back together. It works fine.
I'm sure if you call them, when we're off the show here, I'll send you the guy's information from Lou Photo, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to help you out. Especially they're one of our sponsors this year as well for NRL Hunter. So,
Oh, nice.
I'm sure he'd be more than happy to help you out and get that fixed, so you don't
Yeah.
have to run around with a duct taped tripod.
Yeah. Probably pull the duct tape off and just put a big SRS sticker over it.
Right. There you go. There you go. Very cool. Well, we're almost at that time of the show. I mean, is there anything that you want to say? Well, actually, I guess the biggest thing is, where can people find SRS products?
We have a bunch of resellers, but you can actually buy everything we make on our website. There's not a single product on our website that isn't manufactured in the building that I'm sitting, designed by my engineer friend or me and Zach.
Right.
We make all our products in-house, and then we do a bunch of contract manufacturing for other companies too.
Fantastic. And then for 2024, you'll be able to buy certain SRS products that are NRL Hunter specific, which all of them can be used, but the most popular ones on the NRL Hunter website. So we're super excited and grateful to be a retailer for you guys as well now.
Yeah, definitely. It should work out good. Our products are a really good match for NRL Hunter.
Absolutely. I believe in them. I've run, ever since I met you a couple of years ago, I started running your brakes on all the rifles, and yeah, they're fantastic. So I want to carry products on the NRL Hunter site that I believe in or that I know work. And so we're super stoked to be able to link up with you and make that happen.
Yeah, that's what we strive to do, make good products for people. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. All right, guys. Well, Ken, you survived. You made it through.
We made it. I didn't fall asleep.
You didn't fall asleep. It's still early in the morning. The sun's barely breaking through. So we still got a full day of work ahead for both of us. I really appreciate you being on the show here today. And I look forward to seeing you and the crew out in 2024. We appreciate your support as a friend and a competitor, and also as a sponsor of the NRL Hunter Series. So we really appreciate everything you do for the community.
Yeah, definitely excited for the 2024 season. I think I'll be at 4 or 5 matches. I'm going to haul an easy up around with the SRS logo on it and probably have some demo stuff there. And yeah, should be a good year.
That actually brings up a good point. Will you be doing any sales at the matches that you attend? Or just demos?
Yeah, it's actually a good idea. I'll have our break display. You've seen that.
Yeah.
I'll have our break display out so people can check out stuff. I might figure out a way to do sales. We haul some breaks, tack tables. I think tack tables are a good one. There were a bunch of people that when I took them to the belt match, there were people that were like, hey, do you have any extras? Can I buy one? So I actually ended up selling 2 of them. I just brought them to give to 2 of my buddies, and then I gave theirs away.
It's funny because a tack table is one of those items that a lot of newer competitors don't ever think about or don't know about. So when they see, you know, the more experienced guys that are competing with them, you know, it's one of those pieces of gear that I don't know that it's 100% necessary, but it is absolutely useful in situations. I use my tack tables when I hunt, so I think that's a great buy as well. So fantastic. For everybody that's listening, Salmon River Solutions, you can find them online. You can find some of their products on the NRL Hunter website here pretty soon. But until then, Ken, is there anything that you want to say to everyone listening?
No, I think that's good. I would say to all our customers, thanks for the support. It's been a crazy 3 years.
Well, we're super, super happy for you. We look forward to many more years of awesome Salmon River Solutions products. For everybody listening, we appreciate you taking the time. Until next time, be safe, keep shooting, and we'll see you on a match. Take care.